I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome to College Football Live, built by the Home Depot.
Last night, Tulsa-Tulane. I want you to pay attention to this little nugget. Look at the score here as it's first and goal. Under five or under six to go. Tied at zero. Well, that wasn't the case for long as the this game had a lot of points going on late. You see it here, it's 21-14. All of a sudden, things got crazy. Matt Berry will tell you exactly how it went down.
We're going to go to the end zone. It is caught! Touchdown, Tulsa! J.C. Santana! Davis Brand Magic in Oklahoma!
It's a Hail Mary coming out of nowhere from the third-string quarterback. I mean, that's the sort of drama you get on Thursday Night Football. Look at him come down with it, reminiscent of this little Hail Mary we all remember from just a few days ago, obviously from DeAndre Hopkins. So then we get to the second overtime. Michael Pratt is about to drop back, and he is intercepted by Zavin Collins. Luge, you've seen this kid, 96 yards for a touchdown. Tell me how big he is.
Dude, that kid is 6'4", 260 pounds, and look at him outrunning everybody. Zavin Collins is going to play himself into the first round, man.
I'm telling you, I love big boy touchdowns, and that counts. I'm telling you, when you got those kind of wheels, you go for it. Great win, obviously, last night, dramatic fashion. It's College Football Live. Tom Luganville, David Pollack, I'm Jason Fitz. And, guys, we got a lot to get into over the course of the next 30 minutes. We'll start with some COVID news, and this is the breaking news today, is Miami head coach Manny Diaz has tested positive for coronavirus. He went to Twitter to announce that he has the virus and also said he's currently in isolation, feeling good overall. And as a result of this, we'll continue to interact with the team via Zoom, sort of the new norm in 2020. So Miami's going to be dealing with that. But teams all across the country are dealing with it. You can see it here this weekend, a new record with 16 FBS games postponed or canceled this week. That's the most in a single week this season. Number five, Texas A&M was scheduled to host Ole Miss. That's the highest ranked team to be affected this week. So as we get further into the season, the conversation becomes about the college football playoff and when it's coming. The semifinals are scheduled to be played January 1st at the Rose Bowl, the Sugar Bowl, and the Sugar Bowl, while the national championship game will be played in Miami Gardens, Florida on January 11th. The question is, what happens if a playoff team has a COVID issue? This is what Bill Hancock, executive director of the College Football Playoff Committee, said about that exact issue last night on Freddie and Fitzsimmons on ESPN Radio.
We obviously would have felt terrible for every team that's been unable to participate. And we haven't decided what to do if a team can't play. That's what we're going to be continuing to talk about during December.
So it's not official. It's not, because the way I read it was, hey, if a team gets COVID and you can't play, then that team forfeits and the team they were going to play is in the natty. So that's not done yet. That's not in stone.
Nope, not in stone. That's what we're going to be talking about for the next few weeks. Not in stone.
We're going to be talking about it right now. Tom Luganville, what's your reaction to what you just heard from Bill Hancock?
Well, they don't seem to have a lot of details yet on something that is really, really important. What they have confirmed is that they're not just going to allow the number five team to jump into the space of the number four team or three team or whatever team could potentially come down with COVID. So what option does that leave them? How do they get to a solution where the four teams that they select are the four teams that end up playing? For me, they're going to have to put these four in a bubble. And I know a lot of universities are starting to go the route of saying, hey, after Thanksgiving, everybody's staying home. We're going all virtual. You know what you do? You bring your teams back and you put them in one dorm, like the old school days, Davey. Put them in football dorms. Keep them all in one area. And let's get this thing right so that those four teams selected are actually the four teams that play.
And by the way, Tom, that's one of the best moments of your lives, was in an all-football dorm.
What
you got to get accomplished was amazing as kids. I'll never forget plugging in. You could play video games with everybody on the whole in the whole dorm at one time. It was amazing, by the way.
Yep.
I think the only option is to postpone the game, is to maybe move it back a certain amount of days. But, you can only do so much within a window. I'm going to continue to beat this drum, and I've started – before the season started, I'm going to keep going throughout the season, and I don't care if anybody listens. This is why we should have more than four this year. We should expand the playoffs this year. It makes perfect sense to do so. There's so many factors that are going into this, and we got to be adaptable, and we got to be able to adjust to whatever we see. So the committee's dealing with everything else in 2020 like we are, kind of just taking it as it comes.
But my issue, I think, Pollock, is that when you think about what we just heard from Bill Hancock, he's saying, well, right now, and nothing's in stone. They don't really know what they're going to do. It's not like COVID is a new issue. Isn't it fair for us to be looking at the College Football Playoff Committee and saying, hey, why is there not already existing some sort of backup plan on what's going to happen for the college football playoff to actually go on?
Well, I mean, I get a kick out of these scenarios because everybody complains about it. Well, why don't you come up with something better then? Like, I just think it's tough to – it's easy to say, but it's not easy to do. And we're already – by the way, how do we make plans right now when you're seeing – you just talked about 16 games canceled. Last week, 20% of football games were canceled. I mean, we don't even know what kind of games we're going to get in up until that point. Yes, they need a plan, and they have the first plan in place, but – we got to be able to adjust, but they do have to come up with a concrete rule at some point and be able to stick to it. But I'm just telling you, from what we've seen so far, everything's fluid. So you better be able to bob and weave too, but I'm with you. They need to come up with something concrete so we have some parameters, but then you can be like the Big Ten and just change it two or three times.
Well, and I have no problem with coming out with statements and then adjusting them as we get more data. But, I mean, to this conversation, we still don't even know what the minimum number of games required is going to be from the committee. I mean, are they going to let a four-win Wisconsin team into the playoff conference? Like, we have no information from the committee.
And that's college football playoff. That's their worst nightmare, is what happens. You're going to hear the phrase data points more than you've ever heard it before. You know, what's going to be enough wins? What's going to be enough games? Well, you know, look at when they come out with the first four. Are they going to put an undefeated Ohio State team in the top four that's played four games? Is that what they're going to do? I mean, there are so many things we don't know yet that have yet to play themselves out. But the problem with postponing, and I agree with David in theory, but then you run up against the National Football League. You run up against the NFL. They're not going to do that. And so it doesn't leave them many opportunities unless you start to shoot for some type of midweek scenario.
Well, we do know that there will be some games played this weekend.
Real quick, 1 second. When you play games, here's the important thing about playing football games this year. Yeah, we can talk about all the great things about playing football. When you play the game, the schools are making money. Okay, that's the bottom line. Like, they're trying to pay bills by the more games they can play. So that's why you might see more games in the Pac-12, obviously, open up. We're okay. We'll take some more games if we can find more games within this, and they're talking about doing that now. So obviously the financial component of this, too, is these teams want to make money.
Sure.
Well, let's get to some of the games we know we will see this weekend. We like to do this every Friday. Take a look at the Saturday spotlight of action coming up. We'll start with number 7, Cincinnati at UCF. The Bearcats have put up at least 40 points in 3 of their last 4 games. But, Luke, you got your eye on something other than the Bearcats' offense here, right?
Yeah, it's the defense. Something's got to give. You got a prolific offense at UCF, and you've got a defense. Marcus Freeman, the defensive coordinator, he does some things that'll make your head pop off now. A 3-man rush, a lot of simulated pressures. They forced a turnover in 17 straight games. They're leading the country with 12 interceptions already. They force quarterbacks into bad decisions. Dylan Gabriel is going to have to be on point with everything he's doing at the line of scrimmage.
All right, next up on the slate, we'll take a look at Clemson taking on Florida State. Clemson's outscored the Seminoles 104-24 the last 2 years. Pollock, some guy named Trevor Lawrence, I think, is actually back in action here.
Man, it's going to be great to see Trevor and his flowing locks getting back in the mix, baby. And you know who else is excited about that? Travis Etienne is jacked. He's tired of running into 22-man boxes and having to earn his yards even more than he's ever had to in his life. So going to be curious to see how Trevor Lawrence implements himself back in the offense and how explosive this offense becomes, you know, what it was after his couple weeks off.
Flipping over to the SEC, Mississippi State taking on Georgia. What do you got here, Luke?
Well, if JT Daniels is slated to start, as we've seen reports that he will, What does that do to the offense? What does that mean for Georgia? I think a couple of things is it would certainly enhance the passing game. But to Stetson Bennett's credit, you're not going to get some of the plays that he's made with his legs, extending plays, making some runs. As you can see right here, that's not what JT Daniels does. But maybe, just maybe, this can help them infuse some of the weapons around him so that they can function in the passing game on offense.
Let's get a little up to the Big Ten. Wisconsin still has a path to the playoff, but they got to beat a surprising undefeated Northwestern team. What are you looking for in this one, Pollock?
Man, it's been fun to watch. Like always, you got Wisconsin's offense that's so cool and so unique with so many shifts and motions and so many people. You just the habit of what? Which one of y'all kicked me? Trying to figure out what's going on. But now watching Graham Mertz in this offense, who's a guy that can do even more with his arm. He's seeing things. He's anticipating. I look for this quarterback for Wisconsin to see if Wisconsin is for real, for real. Because Northwestern every year gives him a little bit of trouble. I'm going to see if Wisconsin can take care of business this week.
Well, you mentioned Wisconsin's defense. Let's take a look at today's Goodyear More Driven Player, which is the entire Wisconsin defense presented by Goodyear. It's a small sample size, but Wisconsin's been dominant on defense in its two games. The Badgers lead the FBS in opponent points per game, yards per game, efficiency, and first downs allowed per game this season. Fun to see them get back in action. Speaking of back in action, who's ready for some bedlam in the Big 12? Oklahoma State is on tap. We will get you everything you need to know about it coming up next on College Football Live.
College Football Live is built by the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
You're watching College Football Live, built by the Home Depot.
Coming up on game day tomorrow morning, Spencer Rattler one-on-one sitting down with Maria Taylor. She'll talk to the Oklahoma quarterback. Plus, we'll take a look at the Big Ten and some of the impact games happening over the course of the weekend. And a great story about the long road back for Mackenzie Milton, the quarterback at UCF, Tom Rinaldi. We'll get you that. That's all coming up tomorrow morning on game day. In the meantime, let's take a look.
I'm going back here, baby.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
This is your first time going, right?
Yeah. So, actually, I read the instruction manual. I don't know if I turned those on right, but it lit up. For me, so growing up in Oklahoma, like, I've always been an OSU fan. So, like, all you hear about is OU. Yeah. All the time. Every year we get a chance to beat them, but I feel like this year we have a special team. This is Bedlam, like, this is something different. And he was like, no, I know, I've been in rivalry games and everything before. And I was like, no, like, you haven't been in one quite like this one before. I don't know what it is, but it's always different.
This one's going to be a good one for the ninth time since 2010. These two teams will meet as AP-ranked opponents, trailing only Alabama and LSU for a single FBS matchup. Cowboys defense and the Sooners offense lead the Big 12 in a number of categories, so something we'll have to give in Bedlam this year. Thought it'd be a little bit fun to take a look at some of the history, some SportsCenter Campus Classic, look back at some of the best moments. Let's look at November 5th, 1988. Cowboys take a 28-24 lead in the fourth quarter on a Mike Gundy option pitch to one Barry Sanders, the 1988 Heisman winner. Oklahoma quarterback Charles Thompson. I'm a little ahead here. Then we've got this little beautiful touchdown here, but it was dropped. That's where we are. The would-be Gundy dime on fourth and forever drop. Luke, that has to hurt you as a former quarterback.
Let's get to it. Kills you.
2001, Les Miles era in Stillwater. It's his first year. Oklahoma State entered as a 27-point dog. They won the game after a 14-yard Josh Fields touchdown pass to Rashawn Woods in the final minute, knocking number four Oklahoma out of the Big 12 title game. And let's go up to 2010 here. Four touchdowns in the span of 92 seconds in the fourth quarter, including a kickoff return. Part of Landry Jones' then school record, 498 yards passing, four touchdowns, three picks. Landry Jones, not enough credit, Lugs, in the conversation.
Man, he had a wonderful career there, man. I think people forget about it.
Let's go to 2012 here. The first overtime game in Bedlam series history. Blake Bell runs in the tying touchdown on fourth and one. And you've got Brennan Clay
Belldozer.
Finishing it off.
With the Belldozer. Don't forget about the Belldozer.
Yeah.
Oh, let's go to the next one. Second overtime game in series history, December 6, 2014. Tyreek Hill, I don't know if you've ever heard of him. 92-yard punt return, touchdown, 45 seconds left to tie the game and force overtime. But then the dreaded, after this, comes the dreaded missed field goal in overtime. Oklahoma State did not miss it. Ben Grogan getting it. Mike Gundy with his second career win as coach in the series. That was his last. The Sooners won five straight. So, Luke, what are you expecting from this year's Bedlam?
You know, everybody keeps talking about Oklahoma's offense and Oklahoma State's defense, and I had a chance to have Oklahoma a couple of weeks back, and what I was just stunned by was how far along they've come on defense. Their defensive front is an entirely different group than they've played with, at least in the Lincoln Riley era. They actually got some guys up front. Perrion Winfrey, the junior college transfer inside. Isaiah Thomas has been a designated pass rusher. It's not just Ronnie Perkins. It's Nick Benito. And Alex Grinch defensively has this group tackling really, really well. I think if Oklahoma tackles well and can create a turnover, then it might be the defense for Oklahoma that becomes the story of the game.
Well, and you're going against the offense of Oklahoma State. That what are they, Lugs? I mean... Yeah. You know, right. We looked at him a couple weeks ago against Texas, and I'm like, whoa, this Spencer Sanders cat throws for 400 yards. Looks great. I mean, they don't run the football like they did a year ago. A year ago, they ran the football, and you knew Chuba was going to make big play after big play. They're not making holes. They're not creating lanes. And sometimes they're hot. Sometimes they're cold. I mean, Kansas State, I'm just going, what am I watching? Like, this is Mike Gundy's offense. I'm not used to seeing it. So the improvement of Oklahoma's, you know, defense along with Oklahoma State not knowing who they are in offense – obviously, that side of the ball is going to be, you know, the side to watch because the strength on strength will come on the other side.
Still a good opportunity to see the continual growth of Spencer Rattler as well. So, obviously, we got a bunch of games coming on ABC. That's just one of them you don't want to miss. Obviously, 3:30 Eastern, Wisconsin, Northwestern. That's a game we talked about earlier. And then Saturday night, got the big one there. Bedlam, Oklahoma State taking on Oklahoma, 7:30 Eastern. You can check that out on ABC. Coming up next, the rich get richer. One of the best teams in all the land has again landed the top recruit in the country. The question is, are they the new QBU? We'll talk about it next.
College Football Live is built by the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
This Heisman Update is brought to you by Nissan, premier partner of the Heisman Trophy.
Let's take a look at the Heisman Update brought to you by Nissan. Despite not having played in more than 3 weeks, Trevor Lawrence tied for the second shortest odds to win the Heisman, just slightly behind Mac Jones. Justin Fields also making his case as he has the same amount of passing touchdowns and incompletions as incompletions this season. That's the stat we all love to keep throwing out with Justin Fields. So good odds there, but Mac Jones is in the lead. Speaking of quarterbacks, the big recruiting news coming out is that quarterback Quinn Ewers, the number one ranked prospect in the 2022 class, decommitted from Texas on October 28th. He's now announced he's headed to Ohio State. He is a Texas kid. This is the third straight year we've seen Ohio State land the number one prospect in all the land. So, Luke's, being the recruiting expert for us that you are, I mean, can we look at Ohio State now and say that they're the destination, they're QBU at this point?
Well, it's an awfully attractive destination. The head coach is the coordinator and the head coach, and he's involved in the offense. And listen, the results bore out. And, you know, Quinn Ewers, he reminds me of Zach Wilson at BYU. He's really accurate, can make all the throws. He's an exciting prospect. Now, they're not going to have some of the athleticism that they've enjoyed with Justin Fields, but as far as being ahead of the curve in terms of theory of the game and playing at a high level and high level of competition, I think he'd be the number one ranked quarterback if he was in this class.
So, Pollock, at this point, are you looking at Ohio State's recruiting and saying that they've become the destination?
No, I mean, they're one of the destinations.
They're one of the destinations.
Every year, Luke's. Yeah. Luke's. Well, I mean, think about it. Luke's talks about the same teams every year in the top now.
Yep.
We're going to talk about Alabama. We're going to talk about Clemson. We're going to talk about Georgia. We're going to talk about Ohio State. Here's the difference. All the teams he talks about, Clemson and all those guys, most of them reside in the South. Ohio State's up north, and they get the best players. Compared to everybody else around them, they destroy them. When you look in the SEC, you got like 10 teams in the top 25 in recruiting. You look in the Big Ten, it's not quite the same battle. So that's the difference. They're just separating themselves more and more from everybody else in their conference.
Are we, though, Pollock, maybe taking for granted the fact that Ryan Day took over this program and hasn't seen any sort of a dip?
He's just awesome. He's an awesome dude, man. He's more of a Dabo than an Urban. You know, he leads with love, and he's positive, and you can tell the kids love him. And by the way, you look at from an offensive standpoint, the dude can coach his tail off. And, you know, Justin Fields is putting good position after good position. And if you're a quarterback, you know it's going to be an aggressive offense. I'm going to get to chuck it around the yard. So I think Ryan Day, he's proven that he's a great coach. He's proven he's a great offensive coach. He's proven now that he can recruit elite-level talents. And once they figure out the defensive side of the ball completely, I mean, oof, it could be a wrap.
So, Luke, then I'll ask you, is with your expertise in recruiting, what can Michigan actually do to catch Ohio State?
The only way that they're going to be able to catch Ohio State is to somehow have the similar success to what David was alluding to outside of their footprint. Ohio State casts such a wide net, but when you look at the players that have supplemented their Midwest recruiting, they're not just guys. They're Joey Bosa, Nick Bosa, Von Bell. They're Justin Fields. They're difference-maker level players. And that's where Michigan hasn't been able to make the same strides to supplement, you know, their in-state and then their footprint recruiting model. They've got to be able to go out and take a great player away from an Alabama or a Clemson the way Ohio State has.
They need a dude at quarterback too, Luke's.
Oh, they need a guy.
I mean, look at LSU. Look at LSU and Alabama all those years and all these years. It's been dominated by Alabama.
Yep.
In comes Joe Burrow, top pick in the draft. It flips and it changed. Yep. And that's the only way Michigan's going to do it. They got to get a dynamic baller at quarterback if they're going to change their franchise and their trajectory after they figure out their coaching situation.
Well, let's have a little bit of fun as we get ready for this weekend's action. There's a couple of uniforms. We'd like to take a look at some of the fun things happening. Well, Oregon, we're used to seeing this from, but Oregon's got some particularly fire outfits that they're putting on this weekend. They're going with the blacks. It looks good. I mean, this just, I mean, I'm all in for this. Where are you on this one, Pollock?
Ooh.
Oregon always does it well. Listen, I'm not the traditionalist, first of all. Like, you did this to Kirk, and Kirk's like, don't mess with the uniforms. I love the simple uniforms. I'm like, bro, if the kids like it, change it. I love it.
Well, that's all it is. I like that one. Go ahead.
It's perception.
Oh, yeah.
It's perception. Absolutely.
Well,
look at that.
This, for App
God
State,
bless America.
I am in love. I am infatuated with this one, Luke. Like,
let's go.
That helmet is absolutely incredible, right?
Maybe one of the most undervalued and underrated jobs in all of college football. That's a Boise State environment on the East Coast.
Man, I just know that, like, look, even I could look intimidating. No, I couldn't. But I would wear that helmet, and I would look darn good trying.
Cover the midsection.
Pollock would be scared of me in that helmet. I don't know that. David Pollock, Tom Luganville, I'm Jason Fitz. As always, we appreciate you hanging out with us every Friday. Enjoy a great weekend of games. Gentlemen, stay safe out there.